Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering Game of Thrones, Season 4, Episode 9, The Watchers on the Wall, and Season 4, Episode 10, The Children.
Yes. Yes, we are. And there is some... things are getting intense. Definitely. And they're getting intense here, too. So we are going to have our usual disclaimers, which include that there's going to be cursing. I know that's going to happen. There will be spoilers, because that's likely. And we are having things to drink. Natalie's still home, which is great. So what you having to drink?
Chardonnay, because we had it in the fridge and I need to finish the bottle. That's why there's so much.
She's doing me a favor because I'm not a Chardonnay drinker. So, you know, I needed it to cook with and there was a lot left. Sorry. And I am having a drink called Now My Watch Has Begun. It is from the cocktail recipes from Game of Thrones, the book that I have. It contains, and I've made a double, I'm probably not going to finish this, but 3 ounces of coffee liqueur, 2 ounces white rum, 1 ounce coffee syrup. I basically made my own. I did the espresso feature on my Keurig and added a bunch of sugar. I used, and this was interesting, I had some decaf Barney's White Christmas coffee. So I used that. It's got kind of some nuttiness, which, you know, is appropriate because it's me. And 3 ounces of milk and some chocolate syrup. Now, sadly, in the book, this looks like it's super cool, like the chocolate syrup's floating on the top of it and they're like little flames and stuff. Not true in real life, but it tastes actually a lot like a White Russian, and I find it tasty and it's good. So what are our sections
for episode 9? It's the Night's Watch and that is it. It's a lot like the Blackwater, but if I must give myself away sooner, less cool.
Ooh, I'm not sure I agree with that.
Really?
Really, I like this episode a lot.
You get wildfire in Blackwater Bay.
Yeah, and you get a big scythe in this, so hey.
Once.
I think this is a very cool episode. I think that the way that this is blocked is awesome.
Oh, sure, but
fine.
I have my issues. We'll talk about it.
We're going to talk about it. Yes, we are at the wall at Castle Black.
So Sam and John are on night duty, and Sam asks about Ygritte and having sex and love and all that stuff because this is as close as he's going to get. Because him and Gilly never had sex, but he is basically in love with her. Sam talks about how their vows are up for interpretation.
Which is interesting.
You can't technical. Take a wife, that's pretty clear, so you don't make them your wife. And you can't father any children. I mean, pull out. So, I don't know. It's not like they had medieval condoms, unless you...
I bet you could come up with a sheepskin something or other.
Ew.
Ow. I'm just saying, things are...
John has the talk with Sam. There's a great line where John's trying to find the right words for how it felt with Ygritte because it was indescribable. He says, I don't know. I'm not a bleeding poet. And then Sam goes, no, you're really not.
Yeah, they're very funny. Really cute.
Then the wildlings send a warg as a scout via owl. Torment back at their camp.
Yeah, one of the fens is actually their
yes,
warg
because the warg, their warg is dead.
Yeah.
Torment tries to tell a story about how he fucked a bear once, but Ygritte says it's a lie and is upset and focused on killing crows, especially Jon Snow. She says Jon is hers to kill, and she will kill anyone who tries to kill him first. Then we go, and Gilly is passing by on her way from Molestown to the Night's Watch for safety, which, I mean, interesting way to go, but I guess you know people at the Night's Watch, so sure.
Yeah.
And she passes their camp as she goes to Castle Black. In the library, Aemon talks to Sam about the stories about wildlings and what they do to their enemies and all that stuff. Aemon then talks about a time he was in love and blah blah blah, and then Gilly's at the gate, and Sam makes Pip let her through. There's a great exchange. Pip, open the fucking gate, says Sam. I've never heard you curse before, says Pip. Yes, well, we'll best get used to it. Gilly begs Sam to let her stay at Castle Black, and he promises that wherever she goes, he goes too. And
then he immediately is like, hey, you stay here.
Well, first of all, the alarm is raised for wildlings approaching the wall. The largest fire in the North has ever seen has been lit. Smokey the Bear would not be pleased.
It's so bright that you can see it on the other side of the wall. Like the wildlings are on the ground level on the other side of the wall. And we know it's whatever, 400 feet high or whatever. And they are able to see the glow from this fire on the other side of the wall.
And the Night's Watch are preparing traps like barrels of oil and others for the wildlings who will try to climb the wall. Alistair admits to John that they should have sealed the tunnel, which is a rare moment for Sir Alistair. And but he still adds his crassness and just kind of like, yeah, no, whatever. You're still a whiny little shit and I hate you. But just because you knew better this once does not mean that you know better in all things. So go fuck yourself, but make yourself useful. Yeah. Then Sam hides Gilly and the baby in the kitchens, and she gets upset that he's leaving her. And I'm like, girl, what? They have 102 people at most. Like, he needs to be out there helping. And Gilly's just being her whiny bitch self. Just
stay
being
with me. I've got the baby.
You're leaving already. Oh my God.
Okay. And you know, it's kind of like the eager in the cave kind of business. It's like, let's not go out and engage with the rest of the world.
I understood it with Ygritte and John. They had some good sex in the hot spring.
That's true. And
Gilly's just a whiny little bitch. It's not even his son. Like, go away. And then Sam kisses Gilly and she makes him promise that he won't die, blah, blah, blah. Then we go over to Pip. Sam approaches Pip. He's afraid because of how inexperienced he is with fighting. Sam tells Pip about how he followed his instincts to kill the White Walker and felt like he was nothing in that moment. He just had to follow his instincts, and it did him credit. He says he's not nothing anymore. He has something to lose, which is Gilly and the baby, the archers start doing their thing and shooting at the people beyond the wall and at the gate because they're both kind of trying to flank, I suppose. They're just trying to distract one and let the other do most of the work. The wall people are distracting them with the fire and all the woolly mammoth and the giants, and the people storming the gate are trying to do most of the actual hard work in killing the people.
Yeah.
And the city, it gets to the point where Sir Alistair needs to go below since they're attacking the gate. And so
They're not going to last much longer on the ground.
No. And Sir Alistair goes below and leaves the city watch guy, Janice Slint, in charge. They start climbing the gate. Alistair gives a good pep talk to the men, and they start fighting. They're like, Castle Black will stand, all that stuff. They start to fight down below. John gets mad at Janice Slint for still not believing in giants, even though they're right, like, 3 feet in front of him. Like, he knows that they are there.
And he's being such a whiny little bitch. Like, oh, we have untrained, soldiers. We don't have, I'm used to working with trained people. We're all going to die because they're not trained. It's like, that's your fucking fault.
Also, what are you doing?
Goddamn thing. Yeah, I mean, what are you doing? You're doing absolutely fucking nothing.
So then Gren, who's also on top of the wall with everybody else, Gren lies to Slint to go below, so John takes over instead. All he watches as the men get slaughtered. He's in charge of operating the elevator.
And he's getting anxious because he's a kid.
I will say this, watching it, like, the action is good. It is great, really action. Well, it's well choreographed. It's very interesting, but you have to let certain people win these fights, and the people who are more important, Tormund and that Fen guy and Ygritte, like, they are going to be taking people down. Mom, let me finish. And you want to show that with them getting a lot of, like, combo kills and really cool, like, interesting kills. But the problem is, I know how many men the Night's Watch have. And so it makes it even less likely and more unbelievable that with the imbalance of numbers in general, it makes it harder to suspend my disbelief and be like, yeah, they're still, like, 50 people left and they're all pulling their weight and they're all being there. When I see like 7 people in a row get killed, I'm like, okay, well, that's not a big depletion of numbers. It is. And so I'm just like, obviously when John gets into the fighting, I'm like, okay, well, he's here and he's actually good at shit. So he's actually taking people out. All these other unnamed.
Sir Alistair's pretty good at shit.
He's good at shit. We'll talk about that. But I think the imbalance of numbers really just pisses me off.
Well, I think one of the things that this highlights is that the defenses mean something. The gate, the spikes on the
wall.
But
when they get in, they're just
killing people. Yeah, but they don't open the gate when they get in. They're still going over the walls to get into Castle Black.
Yeah.
So it is not all of your wildlings are good climbers. Not all of them are going to get over the wall because it's defensible.
But those who do are killing people left and right, Mom. That's what my point is. They have like 3 Johns who they want to show as cool, like really good fighters. Whereas like they only really have 2 people who they want to show as good fighters, who are Alistair and John.
Well, so, I mean, when you're talking about numbers and you're comparing the Blackwater, like, you know, I know the Lannister army showed up later and that's because, and they were successful because they flanked. But, you know, aside from that, you know, that strip of beach, everyone should have been dead on this.
My point is, it was easier to suspend my disbelief on Blackwater with the number of people getting killed because there were just more people. And so I'm not like counting on my hands, like, okay, well, that guy's dead. Now we don't have 102 anymore. It was already an unbelievable number. So I'm just like, okay, well.
Well, Janice Slint ain't doing shit.
Well, no, he's not. Janice Slint hides with Gilly in the kitchens like a little bitch.
And yeah, Pip, she's kind of looking at him like he's cowering behind barrels. And so it's.
Yeah, Sam and Pip are, Pip is. Sam is unloading the crossbow and Pip is firing it. At one point, Ygritte sends an arrow right through Pip's neck and throat. He's dead now.
Sam comforts him though while he's dying, and it's a very moving death.
Yeah, it's very sad.
The giants then chain the gate, the tunnel gate, to a mammoth. And it's pulling on that. And what they are able to do is they drop these kind of barrels full of pitch that is set.
I think these are empty. We're not quite there yet. John then tells Gren to hold the inner gate of the, because they're clearly going to get through the first layer of defense in the tunnel, but there are 2 gates in the tunnel, 1 outer gate, 1 inner gate. And John tells Gren to get some people together and hold the inner gate.
And he's like, hold it. He's like,
yeah I'll hold it. Yes. You have to.
Yeah, there's no choice.
So then Tormund and Alistair fight, and Alistair gets injured, but he's okay.
Yeah, he like breaks the leg or something.
I don't know. Then Sam is traumatized by Pip's death, but starts doing his part and actually kills somebody.
He gets a crossbow.
He does. Sam goes to talk to John. And has to make Ollie operate the elevator and start fighting them himself. And Ollie sees that there's a bow, and he was the best
archer
in the village. That's all dead now. They weren't very good archers then. Anyway, they drop lit barrels of oil to blow the mammoth up and people go like retreat.
Right.
They harpoon a giant. And kill one. The biggest giant and the king of the giants apparently gets through the gate.
I do want to back up just a little bit, because in part of how this is shot too, it is a very, and I know we're going through it very quickly, there's some great long shots in this.
Yes.
The way the camera moves through Castle Black on the inside particularly is really well done, but the outside stuff, because you know a lot of it's CGI, it's really kind of well done how this interaction is.
Mm-hmm.
But it also shows that, you know, they occasionally fuck up. The Night's Watch guys, even on the top of the wall, occasionally fuck up. Like at one point they accidentally blow up one of the bombs while it's still in the bomb dropping. Cause it gets stuck and they're like, oh shit. This is not necessarily going their way at this point. So Sam gets to the top and he's like, John, you've got to come down, because we're not going to stand. The castle is not going to stand unless you get down there. So he leaves Ed in charge. And Ed's got some great lines. He's so great. So
let's at least die trying.
Let's light the fuckers up.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Then Gren is down below with the other people he brought with him into the tunnel.
He's only got six. He's got a total of six guys, including him.
Yeah. And they start chanting their vows as a giant charges at them. And
they were afraid. I mean, he's trying to remind them, this is why we're here. We've got to do this. If we don't do it, we aren't protecting, we aren't keeping our vows. So, yep.
And so they're holding the gate. And then John tells Sam to go get Ghost. And he's like, I need him more than I need you right now.
Amen, brother. Tell him, Ghost.
And then John goes below and starts kicking ass. Ghost is released and starts kicking ass. John and the Then leader fight. Egret sees John getting beaten until he tomahawks the Then.
Now, this, again, it's incredibly well choreographed, this fight, because, you know, Kit Harington is not a tall guy.
No.
And, you know, he's clearly in amazing shape. And it is, you know, well choreographed fight, but there are points where they have him like roll through a fire and just all of this stuff. I mean, you think that he's going to die, and then he's able to get hold of a hammer that is by the fire, which is clearly used for ironworks, and tomahawks the guy. It's like, well, damn. And then they're facing off. I mean, at this point, John is unarmed.
And Egret, he turns around and Egret is just there with an arrow ready aimed at his heart. And he just smiles at her like, hi, you can do whatever you want now. Like, I guess you have a perfect shot. So you might as well do it. But before she lets it loose, and you can tell she's probably not going to do it,
right,
Ollie sends an arrow through her heart.
Yeah.
He's a really good shot, by the way. That's impressive. Yeah. And then John holds her in his arms, and she tells him that she wished they stayed in that cave. And he says they'll go back there. And she says, you know nothing, Jon Snow. And then she dies.
And
so because,
again,
of course, that had to be her last line.
Well, it's not a great last line. But it is a good death. I mean, I got teary.
I got teary with this. Okay. I didn't, but I did the first
sentimental
time.
Sentimental bastard.
I did the first time. But I think my problem is I just heard you know nothing, Jon Snow, too often. I think it would have been great if they hadn't said it like at all in the middle and just said it beginning and end. I think that would have been a better moment.
Okay. And I'm not disagreeing with that necessarily.
I think it just lost its luster.
It doesn't bother me as much, but it does, you know, because we've rewatched it several times, I'm aware of it in a way I wouldn't necessarily have been on a first watch.
Anyway,
but he's clearly torn up by it.
They drop the anchor on the side of the wall.
Right, the wildlings have sent people climbing up the wall, and they have this giant, it's an anchor, but it's also like a scythe. It's got blades on it. And it's designed so it swings on a giant chain. And it reaches down just to a certain depth. So it just knocks all of them off, sending them to their death. And then it crushes them. Yeah. And so Tormund, when we cut back inside.
Well, the others retreat beyond the wall. The people beyond the wall who were doing all this stuff, climbing and sending the woolly mammoths and all that stuff, they just retreat.
Yeah. And so Tormund is inside. He's got several arrows in him and he's still fighting. And John tells him, tells him to chain him up and take him prisoner. You know, you've had enough. And Tormund's like, I should have thrown you from the top of the wall. And John's like, you should have.
Yeah, he has great lines like that.
He does. This is a great performance by Kit Harington.
Yeah, Sam goes to get Gilly and finds Janice Slynd as well. And it's kind of like, what the fuck are you doing here? Then John talks to Sam after, and he's like, I don't see this as a victory. They're just going to attack again tonight, and we'll have less resources and fewer men. And John is going to go find Mance and try to kill him, because that's his only plan, and it's the only plan anybody else has, because they're not going to be able to withstand another siege. And so he's going to go beyond the wall. They find Gren in the inner... gate.
That's the next episode.
No, it's not. They find Gren at the inner gate, and the others are dead, but they held the gate at the inner gate, and they find like the giant's also dead. And John gives Longclaw to Sam so he won't lose it because he promised the Lord Commander Mormont. And he goes beyond the wall to go find Mance and kill him.
And what Sam says is, come back.
Yep.
And that's the end of the episode. Yeah. And I know that it doesn't seem like a lot. And I gather
you. It isn't much.
I thought this was great.
It's a good episode. I'm not saying it's a bad episode. I just think it's fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the thing to me, and this is one of the differences to me, between this and the Blackwater is that you've got people fighting for something that is a little more meaningful than bragging rights.
Yeah.
You've got the wildlings who are fighting for, hey, we've got to get on your side of the wall or we're going to be killed by these White Walkers. And you've got, you know, because they've seen the raiding in the villages and the death to, you know, these peaceful people, you've got sworn knights of the Black of the Night's Watch saying, this is my job, I've got to protect us, and you know, I've got to, you know, protect our way of life, and that's what we're designed for. And so there's a lot more on the line in this battle to me than there is with the Blackwater. I also like the characters a lot more. I mean, I like Tyrion's fine, but I don't love, I was not vested emotionally in any way in that fight at all.
Yeah.
So that was,
I just felt like there was more going on in Blackwater, which kept me interested for the whole runtime. Not that it was bored necessarily. It's just keeping in mind the uneven numbers kind of took me out of it a bit halfway through. And I
did
was
you
like,
feel this way the first time you watched it?
No, I didn't. I was very much invested the first couple times I've watched this episode, but it was only until now that I was like, they have told us time and time again, we only have 102 men. And I'm like, oh, okay, well.
Well, I mean, you're acting like it's not possible. There are documented battles where the numbers, you know, have been that outrageously out of balance.
I'm not saying it's impossible, but for them to try to make certain characters look cool by killing certain people, it makes it harder to believe that there are as many people left standing as there are. That's all I'm saying.
I understand. Because they make it very clear that this, you know,
this is not the all of their the wildling forces, clearly.
Like, I was also mid-sentence. Thank you. They were trying to make it clear that this Thenn guy is really extremely dangerous. And you're right. He is killing a bunch of people. And Tormund is killing people. And, you know, that Alistair is too. And, you know, you don't see a lot of what the other Night's Watch people are doing is because we don't know many of them. There's not a lot of focus on many of them. There's not a lot of focus really on the wildlings either. I mean, we focus on the Thenn, on Tormund and on Ygritte, but there's not a lot of focus on them either. I don't know. I did not find it as jarring as you did.
I didn't. It took me out of it. And so I was able to appreciate it a little bit less. The deaths are still poignant to me. I still really care about these characters, except for Gilly. She can go fuck herself. And Janice Lynn, don't care.
So what were your best parts? Did you have best parts?
Yeah. John is fucking fantastic in this episode. He holds the fort. He kicks ass. He has some awesome fighting. I think another thing is that having him on the wall for most of the episode kind of does it a disservice. I know why they wanted to keep him up there, so that he didn't just immediately, it makes it uncanny that he actually lived as long as he did with multiple people going after him. But I think that if we got to see more of Kit Harington showing off, would love that.
There may be some to come.
Probably, yeah. Sam, I really like him getting his shit together in this episode. He finally confesses feelings to Gilly, although why, I don't know. Maybe she thought maybe it's the Clarice effect, I don't know. She thinks he's cute, and then he has to fly. Anyway. I
got to save us all!
Anyway, save them all.
Save them all,
whatever. Ed. I love Ed. I mentioned this while we were watching. Ed's one of my favorite Night's Watch characters, like, in this, like, section.
Oh, I know.
I love it.
He's I love
so
Ed.
Fucking funny. I love all of the Night's Watch characters. I truly do.
Gren, I adore him.
That's my next one. Gren, He's so brave. He it, we lo when that's the one that hurts. I hurt with Pip a little bit, but it's all mostly because we didn't get to see much of him. We got to see a lot of him at the very beginning, but then they went beyond the wall and he didn't go with them because he's a steward. So I just felt bad that we didn't get to see more of him. Gren hurt, that hurt a
Well,
lot,
the
but he's
Gren
so
and Ed
great.
dynamic is so sweet, and you miss that. Oh God, and he is a real leader, and it's sad. And he went from nothing too. I mean, and yeah, that comes up in the next episode, but whatever.
And Ghost. Those are my best parts.
I have Ghost as well. I have Ygritte as the best and worst part. So I agree with all of your best parts. I have Ygritte as the best and worst part. But that's the only additional. What were your worst parts?
Ygritte's death, Pip's death, Ren's death. Gilly's whining. I can't deal with it. Why are you leaving me now? He has to go fucking fight a battle, bitch. Like, leave him alone.
How do you think you're gonna survive this if people don't fight?
Yeah,
Okay.
I don't know. Janice Slint and uneven numbers.
Yeah, I'm interested that I didn't write down more of those things because Janice Lund is an absolute fucking loser. I have bad thin guy because he's dead, dude.
Oh yeah, Bev Thin go as well.
I kind of have Tormund, but I'm not sure, you
Yeah,
know.
I'll give Tormund a
I've
pass.
got Ygritte's death, of course, is incredibly sad, but also, she's kind of, being awful, like killing Pip. I don't like that. Gren's death just really, that just tears me up. And Pip's death, obviously, as well. So yeah, I don't really care about Gilly. She's just kind of meh. What grade did you give this episode?
And I have changed it. I initially gave it a B minus, but
Oh,
now it's a B plus. I think I do
wow.
like this episode. I think I was upset by the worst parts more than anything
That's
else.
fascinating to me. So I gave this I gave it a, ultimately I'm giving it an A minus, but I had it as an A initially. I love this episode. I think it is, and I didn't put it as the best part. This is incredibly well shot.
Oh, yeah.
It is incredibly well put together. And when you think about the amount of work the set dressers and all of the people who do the
This
fight
happens at night, so
choreography,
like night shoots
night shoots,
in the
it's fucking
cold.
cold. There is so much work that goes into this. The people who created and did all the prosthetics and green screen and everything else for these giants and the
Blood.
mammoth and the blood and just all that stuff. And it's the first really complicated because you have these additional creatures, really complicated fight scenes that they've had. I mean, they had some complexity with Blackwater, but not at this level. And so I really feel like this is an incredibly well done episode.
Yeah.
So there we go.
All right.
Moving
So,
on.
season 4, episode 10, The Children. The sections are The Night's Watch, Beyond the Wall, which is different,
No.
King's Landing, The Road, and Marine.
You want to just do Marine?
Marine.
Yeah.
Still too many titles for Dany. A former slave, because they have to do it before every fucking meeting she has. No wonder they take all day. A former slave was a tutor to a family before he was set free and has lost his home and the organized mess houses and shelter offered by Daenerys and the Unsullied and all that stuff offer no support to the old in the community who have known it all of their lives,
Known
known
slavery,
slavery all their lives. He wants to be a slave again and sell himself into slavery again, much like other people, apparently. She allows him to make a contract with his former master for at most a year, and he's very grateful. And again, but she recognizes it's your choice to do whatever you want to do. I don't want people to think, oh, I'll just sell myself back into slavery. It was so much easier. That would go against all what I've been working towards, but you can make a contract for a year. Then a young farmer brings in his burnt daughter who was killed by her dragons.
By
Bad
being Drogon.
dragons. Maybe Drogon. We don't know if it was
You said the
Drogon.
black one.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. It doesn't even matter. Drogon is being an angsty teen and can't be found. And she gathers Viserion and Rhaegal, her other two dragons, and chains them up and locks them in the pit below the pyramid in Marine, and it's very sad and she's crying.
So and I will say this because I have looked at the titles of these episodes, and a lot of times the descriptions are super vague and that doesn't really help you. But when I saw the title of this episode was The Children, I realize now,
of course, it has double meaning.
It has double meaning because, of course, this is in Daenerys' universe. Her children have to be locked up like slaves, chained up. She's the breaker of chains. Well, she's putting her babies in chains. It's like, do we see some contradictions in terms here? Maybe we do.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that all of us are on some level in chains.
Okay, that's all right.
Night's
Watch.
Night's Watch, sure.
John goes to the wildling camp beyond the wall to negotiate with Mance. Really, it's just to kill Mance, but whatever.
Yeah, he wants to kill Mance.
He confesses to being, he finds Mance very quickly. He confesses to being a spy and tells him that Ygritte is dead. They drink to their dead. He tells Mance to turn around and leave, but Mance knows they're low on supplies and men. So it's like, well, you just know you're going to lose, so you're trying to tell me to go away. They don't want to conquer, but they just want to hide behind the wall. And I'm like, okay, well,
yeah,
then
but you
why
have 100,000 people, and how else are you going to feed them by conquering some of this land? That's the way
there's no trusting that, bro.
And by the way, what do you guys do? You don't build houses. It's not like you're gonna settle down and have a city somewhere. That is not your plan.
You're gonna conquer the cities that they have and maybe even
and
burn
take
them
their
down.
Shit. Yeah, take
and
their
especially
shit.
The Fens. You can't control those fuckers, those cannibal weirdos. Like, you can't satisfy that in a peaceful manner. No.
So John pulls a knife.
Well, he takes a knife from literally they stab it into the table, and so he's just like, well, look at there, it's like it's meant to be. And so he just like grabs it and he's like, oh well, he doesn't even grab it yet. No. But he looks at it and Mance is like, oh, so that's what you're gonna try to do, you're gonna try to kill me. I guess you probably could, but then you die, so I mean, what are you gonna do? And so but before he makes the decision, Stannis comes out from the woodwork.
You start to hear horses, and you don't know it's Stannis for quite some time. You start to hear horses.
You see some banners.
They run outside. You can't see what the banners are. You see that there are banners. You see people in armor. And don't tell me that the first time you watch this, you
were
surprised.
Oh, I definitely didn't know it was Stannis.
Exactly.
But Mom,
don't know it's fucking Stannis.
We have to cut to the chase, Mom. We don't have all day.
Oh my God. Ugh.
Stannis attacks the wildlings because he confuses them with the dead, I guess.
No.
And they got beyond the wall, I guess, by Eastwatch? I don't know.
Yeah, so I can give you, well, maybe I will, maybe I won't.
No.
The book part of this is much longer, very, very boring, and not done this
You've
way.
You've said that about the book the entire time.
Yeah.
He asks him to open the tunnel and no one else will die. That's what Mance says.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what all he wants. And I'm just like, dude, again, you can't guarantee that you won't be raiding villages and pillaging and killing people to eat them. Anyway, yeah, Stannis attacks, Stannis and Davos show up and expect people to know who they are, but they don't. And Mance does not kneel, because that's a wildling thing now. They did not mention this
I'm the king behind them. No, he did. He's like, I'm not a kneeler.
No, he mentions it now, but he didn't mention that before.
I think he mentioned it when John first met him.
John did kneel, and he's like, oh, we don't do that here. But now it's his whole personality. So I'm just like, I guess he's never been approached by this kind of thing before.
That's all wildlings are. They're free folk.
John reveals who he is. He's Ned Stark's son.
And Stannis is like, oh, he's a good guy.
Yeah, he was a good man. He's like, yeah, I know. And so Stannis asks, hey, what should I do with Mance? And John says, well, I was his prisoner at one point. He could have tortured me. He didn't. My dad would probably say, take him prisoner, figure out what he knows. And so that's it.
Well, the Night's Watch. That's not it. They then have a burning of the bodies.
Right.
There's a whole burning of the bodies. Maester Aemon says, you know, their watch has ended, blah, 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 the usual words that they use. John and Tormund talk. So that, you know, I want
to. Well, first of all, Melisandre is making eyes at John.
Yeah, no, this is in the flames. It's disgusting. But I want to say this because John, the way they block this, Daenerys goes from person to person. Right, in Meereen. So she goes and she talks to this person, she goes and she talks to this other person, she goes and whatever. The same thing they do with John. So they have John going. So John is going and talking to Mance and making his case to Mance. John talks to Stannis.
I think John, this is what humans do.
I'm saying that they're trying to draw parallels with what they show and how they show
it. I
and
agree that they're trying to do parallels between John.
It would really be great if I could finish the thought.
Finish a thought.
So the way this is done, you can see that John is a much more persuasive person. He doesn't command. He's not demanding of people. He just talks to them on their level. He talks to Mance on Mance's level, and they understand each other. He talks to Stannis, and again, you know, he is trusted because he knows how to talk to them. And then he, you know, when they burn the bodies, you know, he's clearly a part of that. And Melisandre's kind of like, ooh, you're a dude. But then he goes and he talks to Tormund. And Tormund's like, because he's like, who's your king now? Is this Stannis guy your king? John's like, I don't have a king. And he's like, yeah, you can't be a kneeler now. And then he tells John to take Ygritte to the north, because she loved him and she was a part of the North, and he carries her body out.
Well, no. There's a great line. Tormund says, oh, well, she loved you. And John's like, well, did she tell you? And he's like, no, all she ever talked about was killing you. That's how I know. I just wanted to contribute. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that is an excellent line. Then he carries her out to the Godswood tree where he said his vows. And he makes a pyre and burns her, and you see him crying. He's very torn up by it. That's the end of that part.
Beyond the wall, Bran and Co. are making their way to the tree, and Jojen is tired. They don't think they'll make it, but then they do. Moving.
Again, the way this is set up, you've got a giant godswood tree. It's on a mount, like a hill or a mountain or a whatever. And the way that is set up, there's a frozen lake, or what looks
it's
like
not a frozen lake.
It looks like a frozen lake.
It's just a patch of ground, and there are some lights.
But it's between them and a cave, and what they are trying to make for is the cave that is underneath this giant godswood tree.
Yes.
Proceed.
They start moving over the ground, and whites sprout out of them like daisies. And out of the ground and attack them. Bran works into Hodor, making him a fighting machine, and then Jojen unfortunately gets stabbed. He doesn't really even try to get away. It's not he's crippled. He could have moved, but Jojen gets stabbed, and the rest get saved by the children and their magical fireballs. The children being a child, the one child, and who's like a forest creature, nymph person. Mira wants to stay with her brother, even though her brother's dying and bleeding out. So, but they're like, no, you have to go because the whites are still converging on them. And so Mira does the merciful thing and just slits his throat, Jojen's throat. It's very sad. And she runs off to join them. And the whites can't enter the cave because of some magic bullshit. And so Bran goes to, Bran is carried by Hodor up to a point. And then once they get to this magical inner tree, like the roots of the tree, Hodor just leaves him to like just crawl. Like, bizarre.
It is really weird. And
give him a little bit more than that.
Yeah. And there's extra in the books, but not good extra. So whatever. But the guy who is playing the Three-Eyed Raven at this point is like an older, he looks like
the first Asian version of the Three-Eyed Raven.
Yeah. He is an older Asian looking guy.
I thought he was ancient.
Well, obviously. But that he gives this speech like, oh, I've been waiting for you, Brandon Stark.
Jojen knew that he was going to die, so he did it anyway.
And I've been watching you all this time.
If I'm being honest, if I was Jojen, I wouldn't fucking go. If I stayed not beyond the wall, I'll just die a different way, and maybe it won't be as bad.
And Brandon's all excited. He's like, I'll get to walk, right? He's like, no, but
you will fly. And I'm like, that's, but not the way you think. It's just
what yeah.
Spoiler alert, you don't see him for a whole season.
Yeah.
And honestly, good riddance. Ooh, I don't care for the subplot, especially now Jojen's dead. I want Ferb. I like Mira, and I like Hodor, but what would they show? Lessons? Like, I don't fucking care.
I mean, there's actually more to this than you think.
We'll check back in with them a season from now.
Yeah, I think there is like a tiny bit toward the end of season, but I
maybe whatever. Either way, I know for sure they're back in season six.
There is not much going on with them for the coming
things
season.
Get interesting in season six, but like we have to wait for a while.
I mean, I think, you know, maybe the actor was off doing something.
I don't know
him. What's his name?
Isaac Hampstead, right? It.
Yeah.
So King's, finally, either King's Landing or the Road.
Let's forget King's Landing. Let's do.
How did you forget King's Landing?
Let's do the Road.
Let's do the Road. Then.
Let's do the Road.
Patrick and Brienne find the.
Proceed. All right, so you've got Brienne, and she wakes up to her horses are gone, and she's kind of like, "Oh shit," and you know they. She tells Podrick, you know, you didn't hobble the horses right. You got to carry all the saddlebags. And they're hiking towards, they believe, the Eyrie. And they come across Arya, who is practicing. And Arya, like, calls out basically to the hound, like, hey, you know, they're people.
Stop
shitting their people. And Arya asks, you know, she's very interested in Brienne because here's a female who is clearly a fighter. She's like, are you a knight? And hey, like, ask me about, starts asking about the sword. Does it have a name? And Brienne's kind of like, yes, it's called Oathkeeper. Does your sword have a name? Because she's practicing with Needle. And she's like, yeah, Needle. And
they're little like, does she know, Oathkeeper's made from her father's sword.
No, and I don't know when she finds that.
I don't know if she ever finds
she's
that.
She's going to find that at some point. You know, they start having this discussion about, oh, who taught you to fight? And they were both taught to fight by their fathers.
No, they weren't.
Well, or allowed to be taught to fight, I guess. The hound comes up and Podrick's like, oh, fuck. That's the hound. And Brienne then realizes that she's looking at Arya. And she's like, here are Arya Stark. And so the hound points out, like, and I love his attitude from the beginning with her.
This is probably the sweetest moment for the hound with Arya.
Well, it is. But he starts out like, all right, Brienne of fucking Tarth, you're not going to take this chance.
You're not qualified
to protect her. You've got Lannister gold all over you. You're going to sell her back to the fucking Lannisters. And she's like, no, I had an oath with Catelyn.
I'm going
to
keep her safe. And then he's like, there's nowhere that's safe for this child. And he starts naming all the dead people in her life. And it's like, father dead, mother dead, brother dead, two brothers that they're not going to mention, presumably dead. John, God knows where he is. Sansa, God knows where she is. And then also, like, everybody is dead. Her aunt's dead.
Yeah.
There's nobody left. Dead.
There's no one to protect her. And it's like, I'm like the best option she has at this point. And Brienne's like, no, I'll protect her. And it's like, nope. And so a big sword fight ensues. And it's a pretty awesome fucking sword fight.
It's just brutal.
It's on uneven terrain. It is incredibly well choreographed. Again,
you know what it looks like? Fighting people. It kind of looks like from Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, that uneven terrain.
Yeah.
In a way. Not exactly, but it's a similar vibe where they're on a cliff.
Yeah, you can tell, and much of this, of course, is shot in England or Northern Ireland. So
at least the northern parts.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is shot in Iceland, the really northern, the wall kinds of things.
Beyond the wall.
Beyond the wall and the wall kinds of things.
God bless them.
But it's like lava rock. It's very rough, you know, like Scottish Highlands, maybe. So you've got like serious choreography issues. I can imagine you're spending a lot on these actors and all of the equipment that they have
This was a bitch to put together, and they did
a shaky camera most of the time, and it's a rough fight. Unlike the sweeping shots in the last episode of the fighting, that's beautifully choreographed with actual weapons and cool shit like that. Nope, they're just punching each other, trying to get Arya.
Yeah,
Arya runs up, and Pod has to go after her.
Well, and loses her.
And loses her immediately.
Because in part, he is trying to keep an eye on Brienne. Like, that's his oath, is to take care of Brienne. So eventually, Brienne gets a really good slice into the Hound and pushes him more or less off a cliff.
She also bites the other side of his neck.
Oh, I thought it was by his ear.
I thought she was his neck or his ear or something.
Yeah, it's really bad.
She spits it out. It's gross. She punches him off a cliff, essentially, but they still can't find Arya. So she screams for her, but Arya is hiding behind some rock. And Arya goes to the Hound, who begs for a swift death. And he even tries to, like, goad her with, like, all of the people that he's killed, like the butcher's son Micah, and then
he talks about how he
should have raped Sansa on the night of the Blackwater. No,
he's like, at least I'd have one happy memory.
And then she's like, you don't even mean that, do you?
Yes, she knows.
She doesn't mean it, but he just wants a swift death, and he wants to get a rise out of her. But she takes his money and leaves him to die and goes off on her own. I have the theory that she just didn't have the heart to kill him.
I think so, too. I
think they've gotten so used to each other that
she always threatens. She used to, yeah.
Much like in the Ygritte Jon situation, like, you always threaten to kill him, but you're never gonna do it, are you? And it's not romantic at all. It's just like, you've taken care of me, I've taken care of you in many ways, I'm not going to just kill you.
Right, but she takes his money.
Yeah, she takes his money, and she leaves him to die, because I think in her way that's more merciful for her in her conscience.
Well, I love this too. Like, he's dying, but when she takes the money, he's like trying to stop her.
Yeah, I was like, what good is money, dude?
You're supposed to be dying here. But in any case,
she's on the road on her pony and finds a port. She asks to go north to the wall, but they are like, nah, we're not going there.
We're going home.
To
Braavos.
I love that her instinct is to go to Jon, though.
Yeah.
I forgot that was her instinct. Oh, I thought she was immediately going to go to Braavos, but like, I was like, No, that makes sense that she wants to go north.
But they're like, no, we're going home. And she's like, where's home? And they say, well, it's Braavos.
The free city of Braavos.
She's like, I've got this coin.
And he's like, I'll give you a cabin.
And she's like, Vala Morghulis. And he's like,
Vala Morghulis.
And you get a cabin now. It's like, whoa. And then you hear this lighter version of the
music slaps. With a boys choir. Yeah, it's so good.
And you have this sense of adventure, and it's like,
there's a nice long swimming shot of Arya, like, right, walking around on the deck. It's so good.
There's change for her. And this whole episode has a lot of that for many characters, not obviously Daenerys' dragons.
All right, so King's Landing. Jaime releases Tyrion with the help from Varys to escape. Tyrion and Jaime say goodbye. Jaime gives some instructions to go.
Sweet. It's sweet between the brothers. They hug. I actually love this scene between Tyrion and Jaime. I mean, there have been some really good ones, but I love this one particularly because, you know, we've had some other things with, and again, King's Landing has also got the same sort of thing where Cersei goes and talks to a bunch of people.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so, because it starts a lot sooner. So, in the beginning,
they have
Cersei and Grandmaster Pycelle, and Qyburn. And I think maybe this is the analogy I was really seeing more, is the Cersei versus Jon. So, you've got her, they're working on the mountain.
No, sorry. Going back to the whole analogy thing, I do think that I see where you're coming from with the Jon and Daenerys. I was unsure about your wording, though. So I think that what you were saying is he gets down to their level and doesn't get all high and mighty, while she like is up in, like, literally in the frame. She's higher than them. She is towering over them with her dragons and her bullshit and her fucking white hair. She's an old lady, and she's definitely not. She's like in her early 20s. She's
unbelievably gorgeous.
Absolutely gorgeous and badass as hell. Yeah. However, She holds superiority over these people. She's not on a name basis with anybody, really, other than her advisors, which is what a usual ruler is, whereas John knows everybody.
He knows
everybody on both sides.
Well, and he has been at a level and in the thick of it with these people. So you
does
compare
that for
him. You compare him to a Daenerys, or you compare him to a Cersei, which we're going to get to now.
Mm-hmm.
So Cersei also has that Daenerys element going on with her. She starts out in the scene, the mountain, they recognize that his injuries have been poisoned.
It's a Hamlet shit kind of thing.
Yeah, so the spear that, and I love this so much for the Martells.
This for the Martells?
Yeah, that they were poisoning him.
Oh, well, I love that, but what they're gonna do.
Like, no. Even if I die, you're gonna fucking die too, you fucking asshole, because you raped and killed my sister. Fuck you.
I appreciate
so they,
that.
So they do, and they recognize.
Oh my god, it is Hamlet.
It is. So there's manticore venom in the injuries.
So manticore? Jeez.
Yeah, manticore's hard to come by. Kyburn, however, is like, I can save him. He won't be quite the same.
He'll still be strong.
But this is the only thing that Cersei cares about is, oh, is he going to be weakened by it? And
he's like, oh, no.
You almost get the sense that if he was going to be weakened by it, she's like, oh, just let him die. I mean, yeah, she really is.
Well, that's all the mountain's good for.
Is muscle. That's true. So you see them start to, like, bleed him. Like, you
it's
get
gross.
Get the
it's
venom.
Gross.
Like, it's disgusting. Cersei then goes to Tywin. And she's basically, because again, she is now in this mindset of I control King's Landing. And so she goes to Tywin and she's like,
I'm not marrying Loras. He's gay and I don't wanna.
And they have this discussion. She finally just comes out and says, it's like, because I can blow this family up too. You think Tyrion did it just then? No. I can blow this family up too. And Tywin's like, well, how could you do that? And she's like, I'll tell the truth.
Well, what she
because
really wants
Tywin is Jaime's son.
What she really wants is to stay with Tommen.
Yeah.
And she's very concerned about that because she's lost all of her other children, either to death or by marriage or whatever the fuck Marcel is doing. She's engaged, I guess, eventually.
In season five, she's engaged, but whatever.
She's in Martell territory in Dorne. But either way, the only child that she has near Cersei is Tommen. And if she marries Loras, they're going back to Highgarden and she's probably not going to see him again.
Well, one of the other things that she says in this discussion is that Marjorie and Tywin will rip Tommen apart and it's the only child she has left. And she's
I mean, it's
protect
the truth.
Him. And it is true. It is true.
But she's allowing Marjorie to marry him. It's not like she has an objection to this one now.
Well, right. And the truth really is, like, would Tywin have been that bad of a puppet master for Tommen? I'm not sure.
Was he that bad with Joffrey? No.
No. I mean,
you agreed with most of the stuff.
And
he did
the difference being that Tommen actually is a sensible kid. So he would. I don't understand what her
and
issue
more impressionable.
Is. Right. I don't understand if she's respected Tywin and Tywin's been a good Lannister ruler.
But the problem is Marjorie can tempt him with sex.
Well, but no, all it means is Cersei doesn't have the power anymore and she can't stand not having the power. And so she asserts herself. She's like, I'm going to have the power. It's all going to be about me. And
I will burn a house down before I let you sink your claws in Tommen.
Her claws. She's talking about Marjorie.
Marjorie's
at that
claws.
Point. Marjorie's claws into him. And it's like,
and
oh,
that might come back.
Maybe. Foreshadowing.
She threatens with the twincest secret and mocks him about not knowing about it. Tywin says he doesn't believe her and she's like, don't you? You're too smart to not believe it, dude. And then Jamie. Jamie's mad about Tyrion, but Cersei still blames him for killing their mother, even though that was years ago and it wasn't his fault.
And again, this interchange is Cersei exerting the control she has over Jamie.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
That's
no,
okay. No, I was actually stretching. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was stretching my neck.
So she basically is like, I choose you. I don't care about anybody.
I choose you, Pikachu.
Yeah, I choose you and Tommen, and that's basically it. And she gives him a blowjob.
She's about to do a blowjob, and then they just have sex.
Yeah.
Because a blowjob is not sex. So
what she says is, I don't care anymore. I've told father we're doing whatever we want to do because.
Yeah, no, she told father. And he's like, what? You told him? And she's just like, yeah. I mean, he already heard it from everyone else. Why not hear it from me? He still doesn't believe it, apparently. So go fuck himself. Yeah, and I'll fuck you.
While that's going on, I'm going to fuck you. So here we go.
I have sex on a very odd stone table. It's very Bridgerton, but not. Thank God it's not like Bridgerton. Oh, God. I'm glad Bridgerton's not like this. Oh, this would be so messy with seven. Anyway. Yeah,
okay. So.
Okay, so, Jamie then releases Tyrion with help of Varys to escape. I'm sorry, I skipped ahead. I really didn't want to deal with Cersei's bullshit. Tyrion and Jamie say goodbye. It's very sweet. They give each other a hug. Tyrion is given the instructions to go upstairs to a room, knock a couple times, and then Varys will let him in. And he will help with his escape. Tyrion's not going to do that. Tyrion goes to Tywin's room instead of the way to escape. And you know what he finds? He finds Shay. Calling Tywin. Oh, Tywin, is that you, my lion? And she uses the same term of endearment with Tyrion that she does with his father. It is disgusting, that whore. And Tyrion strangles her to death after she tries to kill him.
With a giant gold Lannister necklace.
That Tywin gave her.
Yep.
Which is fantastic. I love it.
It's fabulous. But he cries because he loved her.
He
loved her and is sad.
I just wish her last line, much like her iconic last line, is, I was a whore. I was your whore. Now I'm your father's whore.
Because that's the truth.
Tyrion finds Tywin on the toilet and holds him at crossbow point. Tywin tries to talk his way out of dying, but Tyrion kills him anyway. He doesn't do a good job of it either. He's like, was I going to let you die? No. And I'm like, we all know that's fucking bullshit.
Of course you were.
Because Tyrion was on slate to die the next day.
Oh, you know what? Something we skipped already. So right at the point where Cersei tells Tywin, we hear the ransom caster. I have to say that because this will come.
Well, we pointed it out while we were watching. I was proud of myself.
Yeah, so like Tywin keeps talking, I don't care about Shay. She's just a whore. And he's like, well, I killed her. And
don't call her a whore again.
And what he says is, if you call her a whore again, I'll shoot you. And Tywin's like, oh, I don't care. She's just a whore. And he shoots him. And then Tywin says, you're no son of mine. And Tyrion shoots him again.
And kills him on the toilet.
On the toilet.
As he deserves.
And we hear the rings of Castamere.
Yay! Tyrion escapes with Varys into a crate and on a ship as the bells start to toll. It's signaling Tywin's death.
And Varys realizes, because Varys, when he sees Tywin, Tyrion, he's like, what did you do? And Tyrion doesn't tell him. But he knows something's wrong, and he starts...
Well, it took him way too long, for damn sure.
Well, right, so then he puts him in the crate and puts him on a ship, and he hears the bells. He's like, oh, shit.
I'm going with you.
I gotta go, too. So
I don't think that was the original plan for him to go with him.
I don't either, but... Yeah.
We'll see how things go.
Yeah, sorry. Rance Kester for us. Mm-hmm. So what were your best parts of this episode? I got a lot.
I have a few. I have a lot. John... so good in this episode. I love John. I love John. He doesn't get annoying until season 7. Tyrion taking revenge. I love that for him. Like, they deserve it. Brienne and the Hound's fight. Shay dying. Love that. The music. Oh, so good.
Yeah, the music is really good.
I know we pointed it out over so often, but it truly is fantastic music. And I was like hand pumping like half the time. It was great.
So embarrassing.
No one was home except for us. Anyway, and Varys for helping out.
Oh, I've had a bunch.
And Jamie. Okay. Great. Good for you, Mom. Can I say Jamie as well for helping Tyrion and only that?
Okay. So here are my best parts. I've got Arya, the Hound, and Brienne, and Podrick. All four
of them. Oh, Podrick, yes! Podrick was present. All
four of them are fucking awesome. I love them.
Podrick was present.
Jaime, Varys, and Tyrion, love them. All of them are great. Varys
didn't even talk in this episode.
I love that Varys is involved in this escape plan. I think that this is great. And his awareness, like, fuck, I gotta go. I love Jon in this episode, of course. I love Hodor, Mira, Jojen, and I even like Stannis in this.
I would also add Mira and Jojen.
Hodor is amazing in this. I love Hodor. So those were my best parts. What are your worst parts?
Sorry, I'm adding them.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Twincess. The poor girl killed by those dragons. Jojen dying, three-eyed raven bullshit, Shay leaving the hound for dead.
That is a knife
to a dick. Like, Jesus fucking Christ, lady. That is horrible. Insane. Well,
and of course, when this reveal happens, you have no idea.
Her face is covered. And then she's like, oh, my lion. Yeah, like, she looks up and
shit.
And her the lens goes into focus on Tyrion's face. And she's like, holy shit, you're alive. Anyway, and also leaving the Hound for dead and Qyburn.
Oh, I didn't include
Qyburn. For his gross bullshit.
Damn, there were things I missed because all I wrote down was Cersei. Honestly, and it is wrong of me, I blame Cersei more than Jaime for this twincess bullshit. And I know
for
that's
this
wrong.
Twincess bullshit in this episode, yes.
Yeah.
In the other episode, it was mostly just him.
Yeah, and I agree. And for some reason, I tend to overlook his role in this, and I shouldn't.
You shouldn't.
Bad dragons. The
bad dragons.
No plan Daenerys because she has no fucking.
I'm surprised she even had a mess house made.
She has so
or
many
shelter.
I mean, there are so few. Everything is just reactive with her, and you know, again, you see the parallels between the leadership styles, right? You know, you've got Jon who works his way up from
man of the people.
Man of the people, love Jon. Jon's fabulous. You got Cersei,
Mother Khaleesi over here
You got Cersei who's born to it, right? And then you've got Daenerys who just thinks it is her God given right. And Daenerys of the three of them, at least you know. Cersei's trying to work within a system that exists. Daenerys is trying to like pull a system out of her ass, but it's all like, hey, I feel like doing this right now. And that's so self-contradictory. Like, I'm the breaker of chains, but I'm going to chain up my dragons. You know, the realization that you can't just let things, you know, I'm making you free. See, freedom's good. It's like you can't.
Freedom comes at a price.
It does. It always does.
And see, this is very similar. Well, I wouldn't say it's very similar. It's kind of similar to the U.S. of like you had to have a system created after the war,
right?
To get all the shit in line. Like you can't just go from so much like order right. to absolute chaos. You
right.
can't.
Right. You can't go from something totalitarian to complete chaos. You have
Absolutely.
To have a structure and you have
it
to
is that we were not slaves.
Right.
But
so
it's,
no plan Daenerys is not a good thing.
It takes time to develop a plan, but take the time to develop it and don't just preside over the city and do your bullshit. You need to actually start devising a plan.
Exactly. But she doesn't. But I also would include the whites, which you did not include, because those motherfuckers are
scary
as hell. They are scary, and part of what happens, you know, when they run through under the tree when they like shatter on that magical spot, and the child.
It's one child.
Yeah, we see one child.
We don't know her name.
And we don't know her name.
We'll never find out her name.
But they, I think we do actually.
I don't know.
But
that's season six's problem.
Yeah, whatever. But there is just this, I really feel like the effects are really cool. The whole.
Well, you missed my Mulan reference. They're sprouting out of the ground like daisies.
No, I got it. Well, because there's the hand. I mean, the hand is. That is how they do it in one. But it is cool, it is creepy, it is scary, and I, yeah, the deaths I don't like, so those kinds of things. But anyway, what grade did you give this episode?
A minus.
Yeah, I gave it an A minus also. I feel like
action-packed.
It's action-packed, it moves the plot.
A lot of plots along.
Right, but it also has this element, like I said, for many of the plot lines of hope. And I should say change for all of them.
Yeah.
Because there is a definite change dynamic in place, even for Daenerys, because she's gonna have to change actually ruling somewhere as opposed to just, oh, hey, I can let my dragons run free. No, you can't. You're gonna have to like actually think this through. I'm gonna say this, I'm not sure she does a terrific job with that, but there we go. I'm looking forward to season 5. What about you?
Yeah, we'll see how things go.
I think there are some very cool things to look
forward
to.
There are definitely good things in season 5, but yes. I can't say it's my favorite. Oh, well, let's rank the seasons.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right, where I'm right at right now, season 1,
mm-hmm.
season 3, season 2, then season 4.
You don't like season 4?
Actually, maybe I'll switch them. I like the Hound and Arya pairing.
I love Oprah Martell. I love
that. Oh, that's
him.
True. All right, so my minor season 1, season 3, season 4, season 2.
Well, season 2 is last in this ranking of 4 in my...
There were going to be seasons worse than season 2.
But I would definitely put season 2 last in this group of 4. Season 1 is still number 1. The question to me is 3 versus 4. Because there are things I really like about season 4 that I didn't really love about season 3, although the Red Wedding is in season 3, and that's like, wow, that's
I like serious Rob shit. Stark more.
I know, I love Rob Stark, but I also love Oberyn Martell. So there,
I like Rob Stark more than Oberyn Martell.
Ultimately, yeah, I do too. Although I like things about the plot movement.
Why is it Aaron dies? Well,
that's season 4, right? So it's tough. That is a tough
Littlefinger's a creep in season 4. He's a creep in every season, but especially
he's
in season
a creep
4
like all the time. I don't know. I mean, you know, the whole Stannis thing.
Stannis is a creep in this season too.
Yeah.
So Lys has a lot more time in season 4.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a good thing.
That's not.
Yeah.
So where are you at?
Right now, I'm going to put 3 over 4, but that is subject to change. We're just going to have to see how this plays out.
So it's the same as me.
Yeah, so it's 1, 3, 4, 2.
Yeah.
But it is
there are worse
a
seasons
very
than season
close
two.
Call.
Season 2 is still a great season.
But yeah, well, and you say that. I haven't watched season in a while. I am not committing to that as a thing.
Season 8?
The entirety of season 8 is not bad.
Okay, okay.
There's a bunch of season 8 I really like. So, sure. You know, we're going to see how that goes.
There's some things I really don't like.
There are some things I really don't like too, but there are some things I really do. A lot. So we're going to have to see.
Go.
We are.
I think we're just thinking of Daenerys walking in the desert as all of season 2. And I don't think that's fair.
It's really boring. But yeah, that's not my focus. Season 2 has a lot of stuff I don't like, the whole Stannis. Bleh.
Anyway.
All right. So we are really looking forward to looking at season 5 because I recall there are some good things in season 5.
There are
but
good things
we,
in season 5, but I don't remember too many amazing things. In
well,
five,
we're
going
to have
one later on. I
yeah,
know.
There's some good things.
There's some
five.
Sad things in season 5.
Yeah, for
I'm
sure.
I'm going to boohoo cry.
It can happen. Anyway, we're hoping that you join us for the boohoo crying. And if not, just join us for the drinks because the drinks are fun. And we are looking forward to sharing them with you. We hope you join us. And
cheers.